First in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Well, welcome to a Thursday, everyone. Karen Cataline, you're listening to Spouting Off here on 1590 AM WSMN and 95.3 FM, our Tuesday and Thursday terrestrial home. You can call it our extraterrestrial home if you'd like. Boy, as usual, lots and lots to talk about. We have a couple of really great guests. I begin with something that I posted on Facebook this morning because I get up, I listen to the news, and then I go, oh my God, I must comment on this. By the way, if you'd like to comment, 603-816-1590, that's 603-816-1590. You could be listening on Facebook and Getter and all kinds of places, but if you want to actually weigh in, this first segment is a great time to do it because that's the time when I have the most flexibility, at least for now. I love live call-in talk radio. That's what I fell in love with when I was 14 years old. So let me stay focused here and go back to the last thing I posted, which I could wax philosophic for an hour, but I don't have that kind of time. I wrote, this is the meme I wrote. You can visit it on my Facebook page, personal, professional, it's all public. If you don't do what we say, we will punish you because, quote, democracy is in danger. Now, I had a discussion with someone on Facebook who wanted to get into the same old argument about we are a republic, not a democracy. And while that's a good argument and it's a good point, I think it misses the point of this little meme here. And who knows, maybe the Democrats do this on purpose because they know we're going to get caught up in rhetoric and in semantics and miss the point. The point is they're using authoritarian tactics to punish people that disagree with them. And then they claim democracy, our democracy is in danger. You notice how they always prime the pump and accuse their opponents of exactly what they themselves are doing. People are behaving in a variety of ways, partly because they are deeply and profoundly concerned, if they have any understanding of our republic, which is dedicated to individual freedom and liberty, if they have any conception of what that is, people are deeply and profoundly concerned. Sure, we have been frogs in a boiling pot of water, I should say, for a long time now. But never did they turn up the heat like they did when suddenly there was this virus. They're still at it with the politicized virus. No matter what information comes out, they stick to their narrative, just as they did when they wanted to, quote, defund the police and blame a whole country for something that happened and then misstate and mischaracterize what happened, whether it was George Floyd or Zimmerman, what you name it. They departed from a dedication to the truth back then, and that was, shall we say, the red flag. That's when we saw that the they I always talk about, just so you know, I can be a little bit specific here, is the radical leftist ideologues who have the propaganda media in their back pocket pushing a narrative they want to push. And now they've taken it a step further post-COVID era where Fauci finally got COVID or said he did. Does anybody fear that he's going to die of COVID? I don't. Does anybody question just how many jabs he's had? Who knows? But the dangers of the jab, the left and the powers that be, let's not call them the powers that be, the left has no concern about. They don't care how many people are wounded or maimed or die from the jab. They're going to push and force it anyway. And now, God forbid, just as atrocious as it could be, they're pushing it on kids 5 years and younger. I read an article that said, well, it's worth the risk. It's worth whose risk? Is it worth their risk? Is it worth the risk of children's lives? Is it worth their ability to reproduce? They don't care. They're going to say it's worth the risk because it's not their risk. It's yours and mine. And they no longer believe that you have a right to decide your risks, but I digress. So if you don't do what we say, we're going to punish you because, quote, our democracy is in danger. Have you noticed that during the January 6th travesty, this show trial, which is all for the cameras, they even hired a producer for it. It is a slick commercial for hate Trump and love the Democrats, no matter how much they're destroying our country. They keep saying that our democracy was in danger because of January 6th. And, you know, in some ways, they're right. They put it in danger when they decided to utilize sting operations to frame their political enemies so they could use it for the midterm elections. Again, alternate information is not allowed in propaganda media. You're just simply not allowed to question the narrative. You're not allowed to question what they're telling you is true. And now they've escalated the authoritarianism that they're going to punish you if you dare to question or if you dare to think something different than what they want you to think. When I was a kid, I remember, and I've mentioned this once or twice before, I remember those chilling commercials. Matter of fact, I even played one on the air a couple months ago, the Iron Curtain, Radio Free Europe. I used to listen to that. I was pretty young and I didn't understand what Iron Curtain meant or what it referred to until I got older and actually was taught what the satellite countries were. Nobody today, I don't think, well, they're indoctrinating kids about there being 57 genders and putting pornography on their shelves. They've taken away all the civics. So kids today, and even kids that were educated in the last generation, don't know anything about the satellite countries that were under the control and authoritarian regime of the old Soviet Union, Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary, Germany. Not East Germany, Germany. Germans love authoritarians. Not all of them, but they have a history of loving authoritarianism. And so East and West Germany were split. So yes, it was East Germany. Got my eras mixed up. And it was chilling to hear that people weren't allowed to think differently in the old Soviet Union, which now the left hates what it appears to be a potentially freer Soviet Union, but they loved the more authoritarian Soviet Union because it's everything they wanted to be. I hate saying that, but it's what I think, you know. And thinking apparently is, the purview of the government now. What you think, how you think is no longer your body, your choice, is it? So they're couching their authoritarianism in a slogan that says, our democracy is in danger. They're the ones putting our democracy in danger. They're the ones because, and I'm not going to get into the semantic argument about democracy versus republic. They're putting our freedom in danger. They're putting our country as it was founded in danger by imposing totalitarian tactics. One of them is propaganda, by the way. Another is deciding that if you think something they don't want you to think, it's dangerous. You're dangerous. If you dare to oppose our authority, you're the dangerous ones. They're not. And what do they want to impose authority about, you ask? Well, to be forced to think, believe, and spout, forgive me, the narrative they want you to spout. And if you don't, and that narrative that they want you to spout is the lie. Because after all, if you have to punish people, bully, intimidate, bludgeon them into thinking the way you think, we know this in our private lives, it's usually because what you're trying to push on people is either a lie or is so preposterous that it can't stand up to scrutiny. Is that not true? Well, that is the case. Now, people think all kinds of crazy things that maybe you and I think are crazy, like the moon is made of green cheese. I don't see the left punishing people for thinking that the moon is made of green cheese. No, they only punish people for not agreeing with them on everything from COVID to guns to how we educate our children, how one mother and father and family educate their own children. They've erased all of those boundaries. They've erased boundaries, and they are all about erasing more of them. So when you hear our democracy is in danger because some people trespassed on what the building is considered the people's house. And by some accounts, they were invited in. Do you know that there are fairly reasonable people who do not believe any of what I'm telling you because they haven't heard it reported anywhere? They haven't looked at any other media but the usual suspects of propaganda media, which will not allow an alternative story to pass their lips. So most people believe that was an armed insurrection. It was not. They haven't identified one person who was armed except the Capitol Police that killed Ashley Babbitt. One Capitol Police officer killed Ashley Babbitt, an unarmed veteran. And I don't think that name has passed the lips of these propagandists. Now, there was a little blip in their reporting in their second or third dog and pony show. And as I told you, please don't watch it. Don't watch it. Don't watch what you know is false based on a foundation of sand, based on no foundation at all. So when they say, if you don't do what we say, we'll punish you because democracy is in danger. Well, they're the ones who are putting our republic, yes, in danger. That is my rant for today. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we will begin with our very first guest here on Spouting Off. Such a pleasure and an honor to have you with us. Please tune in or tune in on Facebook at Right America Media. So many places to tune in. We're going to be right back after this. Stay with us.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, inventor of MyPillow. Thanks to your support, you've helped make MyPillow become one of the fastest growing companies in America. Over the last 12 years, you've helped MyPillow create thousands of jobs right here in the USA. Every MyPillow is made with passion here in my home state of Minnesota to ensure you get the best sleep of your life.
One of the things that I really like about MyPillow is the support. It gives my neck a little hug.
I've never slept better in my life. What's better than a great night's sleep?
Call or go online to take advantage of my best offer ever. For a limited time, when you use your promo code, you can get premium MyPillows regularly $69.98, now only $29.98. With our 60-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose.
Sleep well, America!
Call 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM, R-A-M. That's 1-800-867-0416 and use the promo code RAM.
For the best night's sleep in the whole wide world, visit MyPillow.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back, everyone, to Spouting Off here on a Thursday on 1590 WSMN. And, of course, we have FM, too, 95.3 FM. Isn't that cool? What a great pleasure to be on AM and FM. Well, we have our first guest with us. He is president and co-founder of Arya Sitting Down, Every Black Life Matters. He's chairman of Frederick Douglass Foundation of California. And his name is Kevin McGarry, an entrepreneur, author, public speaker in the arena of civic engagement. Kevin serves as chairman of the Frederick Douglass Foundation. And we're going to let Kevin tell us more about Frederick Douglass because a lot of kids haven't been taught that. Welcome, Kevin McGarry, to Spouting Off. Pleasure to have you.
Miss Karen, the pleasure is all mine. I'm so glad to be here. It's a real honor.
I love your voice and your enthusiasm. That's great. Kevin, let's start with this. A lot of people simply do not know how significant a figure Frederick Douglass was. Why don't you tell everyone all about him?
A quintessential American hero and patriot, a statesman, a minister of the gospel, born into slavery, attempted to escape multiple times, whipped within an inch of his life multiple times. When he was caught, finally escaped, and had the opportunity to spend about 18 months as an honored guest of Europe, UK. Traveled up through that area, through Ireland and other European countries. Then his freedom was purchased. He came back as a freed man because he was such a well-known author and speaker. He was well-known and came to the White House to meet Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, when the Secret Service said, "Hey, we have a black guy at the black door. He wants to speak with the president." And Lincoln said, "Well, what's his name?" And they said, "Well, some guy saying he's Frederick Douglass." And Lincoln stood up. He was like, "Oh, man, Frederick Douglass? Please, please bring him in.
Let him in the front door."
Yeah, yeah. So when Lincoln came into the Oval, Douglass came in, Lincoln said, "Oh, the Honorable Frederick Douglass." They became kindred spirits right off. And Lincoln actually showed him the Emancipation Proclamation and what his plans were for that. Douglass actually admonished him, and said, "Look, Mr. President, this isn't," because Lincoln told him, "Look, we're going to get this to Congress. This is what I'm working on." And Douglass admonished him, "Look, we're going to have hundreds of thousands more slaves slaughtered by the time you get this past Congress. This is the single most important executive order in American history. So, you know, this is something you have to do via executive order." So Lincoln listened to him and followed his advice. And to this day, it is the single most important executive order that's ever been passed in American history.
So here we are. The average person doesn't know anything about Frederick Douglass, and there are people running around tearing down statues of Abraham Lincoln, probably, and Frederick Douglass, out of ignorance. Tell us about the Douglass Leadership Institute and what you do there.
So the Douglass Leadership Institute is a 501c3, and we go throughout the country and we help communities of color, mostly, so Black and brown communities, really kind of understand where policy affects them. So we provide workshops on how do we really strengthen the Black family? What are the policies that are important with that? What are some of the additional criminal justice reforms that can be, should be maybe looked at? And basically we're just connecting individuals with their vote in a way. We're educating them on the things that really do impact them. And hopefully they'll see that the way they've been voting is undermining what actually helps strengthen their family, strengthen their community, and encourage healthy families. And so,
great. Yeah.
So we actually do that kind of work.
So do you ever cover some of the enormous number of lies that the left tells? That doesn't mean the right or conservatives always tell the truth, but there are certain, shall we dare to say, systemic lies that the left tells, such as voter ID is racist against Black people, that abortion helps everyone, including the Black family. I think they tell them let's start with voter ID is racist. Black people can't get an ID, and that's why it's racist. Do you get into that?
Absolutely. We help. Yeah, absolutely. We were right in the middle of the Georgia and Major League Baseball thing.
Right.
And we help people understand that, look, this is demeaning, degrading, and racist for you to insist that Blacks don't have the capacity to get an ID like everybody else does.
Yeah. What's that about?
It's racist is what it is.
Yeah. And does anybody know a Black person or anyone who doesn't have an ID already?
Exactly.
So they're insulting people's intelligence, Black and white.
Yeah.
Have you witnessed people who, when you tell that to, they go, hey, yeah.
Yeah, when we educate people on what's really going on with some of these narratives, these false narratives, the lights start to come on. I mean, people begin to realize, well, yeah, this is really impacting me. Now our job is a lot easier. We have buffoonery in the White House and in this administration. The policies are just cataclysmic for working class and poor communities. So he's made it a lot easier for us to get our talking points out and help people to understand that, look, we need to change direction. We do need to get civically involved, but we can't get civically involved based on traditions and those types of things. We have to look at what's impacting our community today and who are the individuals who have the best policies that are going to help.
Well, yeah. And since abortion is in the news, I didn't used to talk about it much at all, but it's amazing to me that the left has been teaching everyone that the conservative point of view is racist, that conservatives are racist, and yet a staunch conservative is usually the only one that wants to save Black babies, when the left is taking after Margaret Sanger, who believed in eugenics. That's another one. I wonder, do you turn the lights on there and say, hey, wait a minute, because, I was late to the table on that. I happen to be Jewish. And, eugenics don't sit too well with Jews or Blacks or anyone who happens to be in a minority.
Absolutely. No, that's a key talking point for us. we help people understand that that what you know, Margaret Sanger's own quote, when she, you know, she wasn't motivated to start her quote unquote family planning clinics based upon women. She was motivated to start based upon, she was a diehard eugenicist, and she really, really wanted to kill all blacks. So she's on record, a famous quote of hers is, look, we don't want the word to get out, but we want to thoroughly exterminate the Negro population. This is Margaret Sanger, this is what she said. So that was her business model. That's her business plan. Then after she got in business, she realized she can't put, hey, just bring the blacks here. This is the black extermination camp. So she said, why don't we round off our services and provide, you know, other types of screenings and other types of things to help women in general. That'll be our cover. But fundamentally, Planned Parenthood was started to exterminate blacks. To this day, 90%, up to 90% of all of their facilities are within walking distance of black and brown communities. Uh-huh. Now, that doesn't make any sense when we're such a small percentage of the general population. It's it has to be strategic. And so, you know, this is all racist. And eugenics, of course, was racist, is racist. And so we help expose people to that too.
Yeah, and we are seeing shades and echoes of some of the ugliest kind of eugenics in deciding who lives and who dies. When you cheapen life this way, then all of a sudden, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this because we have time. All of a sudden, it's perfectly okay to send COVID into the most vulnerable populations and then force a jab on five-year-olds that it puts them in danger. And that's okay when you don't respect life. I'd love your thoughts on that.
Well, yeah. Throughout the quote-unquote pandemic, we saw disproportional, if you will, pressure put on the black community to make sure you get the jab. Now, the black community is notorious for different types of comorbidities. And so that was really a disproportional death sentence, if you will, for a lot of people in my community. Mm-hmm. So, it is just as you say, if you don't value life in the womb, then certainly it carries over in all these other areas. So, as blacks were dying at a much higher and way disproportional rate than any other ethnicity, there was nothing. They just continued to push. They're pushing even to this day, squarely focusing on the black community. Now, we had some good reasons to be hesitant. Mm-hmm. We still have great reasons to be hesitant, but you know, our reasons were, you know, thinking back on the sterilization that they were doing on black women and never told them. We were thinking back on the Tuskegee experiments on black men. Mm-hmm. I never told them.
Yeah.
And so, this is all under the auspices of a good government programs. Don't you want a vaccination? Don't you want to be healthy? And, you know, we had, you know, what Tuskegee and the sterilization, mass sterilization of black women in the 60s and 70s as a result of the same talking points they're using now.
And they seem to be interested in sterilization too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's never anything new under the sun, is there?
No.
I got a question for you, Kevin. We've got so much to talk about, and I'm hoping that you can stay with us through a break. We do have about 3.5 minutes. Could you stay with us? Because
you bet,
I'd love to talk with you. We haven't even gotten to Black Lives Matter. Yep. And your approach to that. Let me let you wax philosophical about this one. You know, for the black community, and I prefer us to be called the American community, the human right. community, but right. nevertheless, these are the lingo that they use. For the right. black community to hear the people that claim they're going to protect them, the party that says, We're going to protect you. And yet they have called everything racist they don't agree with. Every person who doesn't agree with them is suddenly racist. What is, you know, is that something you cover when you talk to Black people, that they've broadened the term to mean absolutely nothing to smear their enemies? And that's a disrespect to people who care about real racism, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They've so degraded the term. It's useless now. People who actually do have to endure racism to this very day, when they say it, it doesn't carry the same weight it used to. And it's because so many people, particularly political figureheads, are using that term so loosely, it has no meaning really anymore. And so every time you hear it, you're suspicious of the person.
And here's the thing, you know, it is important for conservatives not to flinch when they're called racist, because there hasn't been a conservative that hasn't been called racist. And yet, because people are basically decent, it hurts to be called that because they don't want to be called that. I mean, my God, Candace Owens has been called a racist. Burgess Owens has been called a racist. So we have to laugh it off, which means either we need a new word or we need to set these people straight that it's nothing more than a political tactic. That is all that it is.
Absolutely. And I have a new book coming out that directly addresses this.
Oh, man. Tell us real quick.
It is all you need to set these people straight, because it actually looks at white supremacy and racism from its root here in modern day America.
And what's the book called?
Woked Up. W-O-K-E-D Up. And, and the subtitle was Finally Laying an Axe to the Taproot of Racism and White Supremacy in America. And so if you know anything about a plant's taproot, you know that that's the main vein or artery, if you will, that feeds the plant and helps it to grow. Well, so some people would look at that and say, well, you know, forms of racism or ethnic, partiality or supremacy has been around since the fall of man in the Garden of Eden. And they would be correct. However,
let's hold that thought, because I'm so glad you're going to stay with us. Remember where you were, and I'll try and remind you. We're talking to Kevin McGarry, who wrote a book called Woked Up, and we're going to talk to him about BLM and a whole lot more. Stay tuned. You're listening to Spouting Off here on WSMN. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Being censored, America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. They're not out to tell you the truth of what's happening. They're out to tell you the picture of the world that they represent. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in facts, and prevent people from being misled. The Epoch Times is independent. We're not controlled by any special interest, and we never will be. This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would ensnare this country in ignorance, and between a media that wants to present you with the truth. Subscribe today to our digital edition at theepochtimes.com and join the Americans who are seeking truth and tradition. Read the difference on all your devices. We'd love to have you on board.
Hi, it's Karen Cataline. It's been almost a decade since I wrote Fatlash Food Police and the Fear of Thin. It's about my early experiences in child beauty pageants and being put on extreme diets. Remember when that was shocking? Sadly, that seems like child's play compared to what we are watching today, when politicians and woke corporations are actually advocating for the sexualization of children. Everyone's children. We're watching a frontal attack on childhood innocence. This is one story, my story. Fatlash illustrates and explains why good boundaries are essential for kids to grow up healthy. They need their parents to set them, not the government. Get Fat Lash today. It's available in paperback or ebook at Amazon or at my website, KarenCataline.com.
And now, more Spouting Off with Karen Cataline.
Welcome back, everyone. We're having a fascinating conversation with Kevin McGarry, who is president and co-founder of Every Black Life Matters, chairman of the Frederick Douglass Foundation of California. Thank you so much for the generosity of your time and being willing to stay with us.
No, it's an honor. It's always good to talk about this stuff because there's so much false narratives and misconception and so many of our otherwise, you know, American, fun-loving American people are being so maligned and hoodwinked and veiled from the truth on so many of these issues. So thank you for spouting off.
Well, I want you to keep spouting off about what you were talking about before the break, which is your book called Woked Up, and give us the subtitle again. And
we're laying it back to the taproot of white supremacy and racism in America. So the thought would be, if you know anything about a taproot, that's the main root that feeds the plant, the tree. So you would have to think, well, okay, if you're going to say you're going to lay an axe to the taproot, you have to be able to identify a single entity that's responsible for modern day racism and white supremacy. And guess what, Miss Karen? There is a single person, one person, who's given us white supremacy and modern day racism in America. This individual lived in the early 1800s. He was born, but his works were famous in the mid 1800s. You happen to know who that is?
Mid 1800s. No, tell me.
His name is Charles Robert Darwin. Now, so a lot of people don't know about Darwin's work, but if you read his
Darwin. That was a little muddled. Darwin. Yeah, Darwin. I've heard of him. Heard of Darwin, yes.
Charles Robert Darwin.
Yes.
If you read Darwin's work, you will see on his Natural Selection, his first book, the subtitle was For the Preservation of Most Favored Races in the Search for... Preservation of Most Favored Races. That's the main thing I want you to be in on. What he does in that is he makes a distinction between races. Now, some people would say, well, he was really the first kind of to do this, and so he didn't really know what he was doing. And I, in this book, address that. No, the first person was Friedrich Blumenbaum in the 1770s, and he made the first classification of races. He did it, though, based upon geography, mostly based upon continents. And so he came up with five race classifications. He was also a naturalist, a German naturalist, and a scientist. And so his works were renowned. And the thing about his works, Karen, is he said that there is no distinction with competency and intellect with blacks. None. Whatsoever. So when Darwin came out and he made race classifications based upon skin color and the tonality of skin color, the darker, the worse. And then he basically asserted that whites have supreme genes that need to be preserved. Then you get into the hatching, literally, of white supremacy. It literally started with Darwin.
I'd be willing to bet that Margaret Sanger was a proponent of Darwin, wasn't she?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So here's the lineage. Let me give you because I know we got limited time. You have to get the book. The book breaks all this down. It's footnoted, all their exact quotes. It's amazing. But here's the thing. Darwin, Darwin is responsible for all of the despots in their genocidal aspirations, including Pol Pot, Mao, Hitler, Stalin, Lenin, all of those who have done mass atrocities, mass genocide, all attribute their works to Darwin. Okay, number one. Number two.
Even though he's not responsible for those genocides, but
no, he's not. But
he's
his works,
the philosophical
them,
father, I guess.
His works gave them scientific justification for it, though, Karen.
Wow.
Yes, literally. Scientific justification that, look, well, since blacks are like apes and savages, yeah, they could be expendable. They're at the subhuman level. This is what Darwin wrote and said in his works. This is why, you know, slavery went on as long as it went on, why blacks were classified as subhuman for so long. And so this is what led to that. And so the despots, the racists in history have, you know, scientific justification based upon, I use that in quotes, obviously, based upon Darwin's work. His protégés were Marx and Engels. Marx dedicated all his early works to Darwin. And then he took Darwin's work and really put his foot on the accelerator. Marx was a virulent racist. He used the N-word quite frequently to describe his son-in-law. Son-in-law just was Cuban. Wasn't even black, but he was dark-skinned Cuban. And Marx called him Negrillo and the Gorilla and other disparaging terms, including using the N-word in total. And so Marx was virulently hateful towards blacks. And yet you have people like BLM who say, oh, we're Marxists. Excuse me? You're supposed to be fighting against racism and against anything against the black community. But you're going to go all in with a guy who had it out for blacks, who his ideology is completely and wholly destructive to black communities? These people are, you know, they need a little bit more education.
Heartbreaking to watch people basically commit cultural and otherwise suicide. And frankly, this is a tactic that has been broadened to all Americans, getting Americans to hate themselves, hate their country, hate everything it stands for, and to participate in destroying it. I want to go back, though, to BLM, and I want you to speak at some length. You, of all people, ought to know what Black Lives Matter is all about. Have you had some run-ins with them? And tell us, what do we need to know about BLM?
So, first of all, we're Every Black Life Matters, okay? We started because we saw the hatred, the carnage, the chaos of BLM. And we said, look, these people are not all Marxist nut jobs like BLM. They're going to want a righteous and faithful alternative after they realize that BLM is a Marxist organization, anti-family, anti-father, anti-anything really that's good and righteous, faithful, and just. They're going to want an alternative. So we started Every Black Life Matters. And the reason why is because before anybody could say Black Lives Matter generally, they would have to believe that every single Black life matters specifically. Otherwise, they're a hypocrite. And so we don't hear or get confronted with BLMers because if they were, they would just be admitting that they're hypocrites. Because all we're saying is, look, every single Black life matters, from conception to natural death. And we're concerned with every phase of Black life. What's bad about that? There's nothing that BLM could say that would, you know, compete with that or, you know, they're strictly concerned with police brutality. We're concerned with everything from conception to the grave, every phase of Black life and all lives we're concerned about.
And so, I bet you're concerned about the deaths that happen in Chicago that are mostly Black lives. How come BLM doesn't ever seem to care about them?
Yeah, and they had over 100 million, some cases, people have estimated over a billion, that they could have made so much of a difference in those communities, Baltimore, Chicago, New York, Detroit, these cities where we do see innocent Black lives being slaughtered, especially Black children, and these families then decimated and grief-stricken, and no BLM, no, you know, nothing. And they had the cash that could have helped. They had the cash that could have helped with continued childhood development while we were in lockdown. They could have helped with parents continuing to work by offering some kind of child care credit or something. They had enough money to really make a difference in communities. And unfortunately, they did nothing. So we're here.
No, but there were more mansions bought by, what's her name, Patrice?
That's true. There were
bought mansions, this Marxist socialist.
We were able, I guess we've been able to identify up to six mansions now that have been acquired.
Wow. Yeah.
Four from the one Patrice Kohler's, and then they had the one in Canada, and there's one more, I understand. But yeah, so, you know, they've got their come up, I guess. But unfortunately, there are real barriers in the Black community still. The biggest barrier is in the womb. The biggest barrier is set up because of Margaret Sanger. The biggest barrier is set up because of those racialists who set up their clinics in Black communities, and they're destined to make sure that Black babies are not born. And they say things like, it's unfair that Blacks are born in poverty, so we're doing the Black community justice with this. Excuse me, this is a racist, degrading, demeaning statement. Most Blacks that were born in the early, from the 30s on, were born to poverty-stricken, very poor Black families. And guess what? We've come up. We're thriving. We're here today. Are you kidding me? Who said that we have to be born in a upwardly mobile or middle-class family? That is not, since when do we make those kinds of asinine statements and then assume that all Blacks are being born poor? This is demeaning, Karen.
It most certainly is. So tell me a little more about, tell us a little more about the outreach that you do sort of outside the people to whom you are preaching to the choir. How do you reach the average liberal leftist, left of center Black person who is laboring under the misapprehension that the Democrat Party or leftists or progressives or whatever actually care about them in some way, shape or form?
Well, most of that work is done with the Douglas Leadership Institute, of which I'm an executive with that. And that's where we do the education that we talked about earlier. Because every Black life matters is a C3. We don't really try to change votes at all. We're just trying to stand up for righteousness, faithfulness, and truth. Now, what we do is we go into all communities across the country, and we provide what we call Remnant Rising workshops. In those workshops, we do anti-CRT training. All right, so we come directly against critical race theory. We help people to understand it's hateful, it's divisive. It's completely flawed. There's nothing good coming out of CRT. So we have our own training that we completely debunk it and combat it. It's a full day on a Saturday.
That's excellent. Give us an example of one of the things that is a total falsehood about CRT that you set people straight on. Because everybody, no matter what color they are, needs to know and get set straight on what this
is. Here's the number one total falsehood. The number one total falsehood is, all whites are complicit with slavery. Because of what happened in the 1800s, all whites were complicit. And then what I tell people when I meet with them, I say, excuse me, did we have a civil war? And those people in the audience say, yeah, we did. What were fighting over? Then they think about it and they say, the North was fighting to help set Blacks free. And I say, exactly. So how could you allow anyone to guilt you by saying you were complicit when we had half of the whites actually fight? They took up arms, their fathers, their grandfathers, their nephews, their sons, and laid their lives down to set people like me free from the Democrats in the South. How could we allow them to make such an asinine statement?
So well put. And that there are white people of Irish descent, or in my case, you know, Ashkenazi Jewish descent, whose people didn't make it to America until the 1800s, 1900s, right? 1910 or whatever it was.
That's the other thing I help people understand.
And they're running around feeling guilty that they are somehow responsible for slavery. It's preposterous, to say nothing of the collectivism that it guilts people by the color of their skin, which is in and of itself the very definition of racism.
Exactly. Exactly. So what we help people to do as well is we say, look, there was a study done and they said fundamentally only about 10% of white people in the United States today had family roots in the South that may have had something to do with slavery. 10%.
And that still doesn't make them responsible.
Yeah, it still doesn't. Because that was, well, come on, that was fascinating.
They are not guilty for the sins of their great-great-grandparents.
Exactly. Only 10% would actually even have any family roots. The 90% have immigrated and or were from the North.
Exactly. It's stunning. And yet it's all being done, just as we said, as a political tactic to create divisiveness in America so they can impose Marxism. Do you agree with that? Because I just want to know.
Yeah. So my book covers everything, including Marxist tactics, which CRT falls right in the middle of it. A lot of people don't know that Marx, his number one goal was, in his words, to dethrone God. And what he felt by that was he needed communism to be the religion of the land.
All these Marxists want to be God in their own universe and in yours.
Yep. And then what he meant by that.
Oh, my gosh, we're running out of time. Oh, okay, tell everybody where they can get your book.
Okay. Can't get it yet. It'll be out sometime in July. But please follow us, everyblm.com, everyblm.com. Go to our website. Look at our resources column. Sign up so you can be advised when the book is here. Become a partner. Come side by side with us. We need your help, your prayers, and your support.
Oh, Kevin McGarry, what tremendous work you are doing. Godspeed to you. We love the work you're doing. Keep up the great work. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, that about does it for us. Tune in tomorrow, Friday. Go to my website, KarenCataline.com, for another episode, same time tomorrow. And thanks to everyone, Art and George and Juan, for making this show possible. Keep speaking up.